Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Crest in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
A good Catholic is a faithful citizen.
Make America great again!
What's more important here is not saving the country, it's saving your soul.
It's a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off for us.
Trust in the media has hit its lowest point.
I want the truth!
What is truth?
The age of the passive layperson can't go on.
It's our job to share that love of Christ with these people.
This is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, this is an excellent program.
You have a wonderful show.
I love listening to my car.
That's a great question to start off with.
You are in for a show tonight.
Here we go again.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, and I thank you for being with me. We've got another hour. We're going to be talking about the gospel, in particular, communicating the gospel. The gospel is a particular thing. Catholics often make the mistake of thinking the gospel is everything the church does, and that's simply not true. The gospel, or the kerygma, sometimes it's called, is the proclamation, the announcement of what God has accomplished in Christ. In redeeming the world, rescuing the world, salvaging the world, and calling all of us into a world, into an act of repentance and faith so that we might be joined with him through baptism. We're going to talk about the gospel in this hour with Bishop Robert Barron, who's arguably become, certainly considered by many, the most effective communicator of a Catholic view of life. Bishop Barron will be with us to talk about recent comments he's made in a new book with John Allen, but really to help us understand his unique approach to communicating of the faith. So that's coming up. Now, some of you might be wondering, are we going to be doing anything on this terrorist situation in New York? Not today. We're not going to. Tomorrow, I'll be speaking to Dr. Gabriel Reynolds of Notre Dame on the question of the origins of the Quran, and I'll take time during that interview to investigate what we can, share what we know about this New York City terrorist incident. But that's going to be tomorrow. I just want to tip you off that we're not ignoring it. We're just going to wait another day to lay some stuff down. So coming up again, Bishop Robert Barron, and let me remind you that whenever we speak with our guests here, their books are available at AveMariaRadio.net. But first, the news headlines.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, November 2nd. It is the feast of St. Martin, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. House Republicans are unveiling their big tax bill. In a Capitol briefing today, House Speaker Paul Ryan says the sweeping tax cuts will help those who need it most.
This plan is for the middle-class families in this country who deserve a break. It is for the families who are out there living paycheck to paycheck who just keep getting squeezed.
He argued that loopholes will be eliminated and said the complex federal tax code will be simplified. The proposed legislation will be the largest revision of the American tax code in more than three decades. Filing complaints against telemarketers, well, now there's an app for that. Randy Bell has the story.
The Mississippi Public Service Commission says giving people a simple way to report violations of the no-call law should put some pressure on those telemarketers.
It'd make our jobs easier to get as many complaints registered as we can because that helps us track down these people that are breaking the law.
Commissioner Cecil Brown says they believe Mississippi is the first state to develop a free phone app, which lets you file a complaint as soon as you hang up on a telemarketer. You can find it in the Apple App Store or Google Play under MS No Call. Randy Bell in Jackson.
And the University of Notre Dame just became one of the first employers to take advantage of the new Trump administration rules allowing exemptions to the Obamacare contraceptive mandate. Last week, the university announced that it would drop birth control coverage for its students, faculty, and staff. And now your fascinating fact for the day. In 32 years, there were about 1 billion seconds. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. It's my great pleasure to have with us right now Bishop Robert Barron, who's founder of Word on Fire Catholic Ministries. He is currently Auxiliary Bishop of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Many of you know him from his well-received series, Catholicism, an award-winning documentary about the Catholic faith, which aired on PBS. He's the author of many books and has served as commentator on Fox News, CNN. You've heard him on EWTN and also NBC. He was he keynoted the 2016 World Youth Day in Krakow and the 2015 World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia. And recently we've got a new volume out, To Light a Fire on the Earth, Proclaiming the Gospel in a Secular Age, which Bishop Barron did in conjunction with journalist John Allen. Bishop, good to have you back. Thanks.
Al, it's always a joy to be on with you. Thanks for having me today.
Was this a fun book to do with John?
It was. It was suggested to me by Gary Jansen, who's an editor over at Random House.
He's a friend of mine.
Would you be open to having a conversation with John Allen and seeing if a book might come out of that? And I said, oh gosh, sure. I would John be interested in something like that? I was a little doubtful, but then he got back about a week later and said, talk to John. He's very into it. So John came to my house, and that's really the fun part of it, as you suggest. When he came to Santa Barbara, and we had, I'd say, about 25 hours of conversations, if you add them all up.
Wow.
Usually in three-hour increments. And he came, I think, three separate times. And anyway, it was a very lively process. And then, you know, we recorded those conversations. And then from those recordings, eventually edited it down to the book form.
Wow. That is a lot of time that he gave. I know people who have written full biographies of living figures, and they don't spend 25 hours.
Yeah. And one thing I really wanted, John and I both wanted to avoid with this book, was just sort of a standard, here's a question, here's the answer. Here's a question, here's the answer. We wanted it to read like a conversation.
Yeah.
So, of course, we did a fair amount of editing and, cleaning up and all this, but we wanted it to be, have that sort of feel of spontaneity, which I think it does. It reads like two people are really talking to each other. And that's very much what I wanted.
Well, I love it, by the way. One reason I love it is because I do think it reads well. But secondly, from conversations we've had over the years, I've said to myself, oh, that was good. Now, a lot of that stuff's in this book, so I can I can go to it and refer to it and refresh my memory. It's really helpful. It also has a section in it which I didn't know much about, and that is your own upbringing and your own story.
Yeah.
You were raised in a solid Catholic family, but you say they weren't overly demonstrative about the faith. How did you know they were deeply committed if they weren't overly demonstrative?
Well, what I would mean by that is it never would have occurred to my parents in a million years to miss Mass on Sunday. It would never occur to them in a million years not to send their kids to a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
Catholicity was just, it was life.
Yes.
Yeah. They're Irish people, though, and so we Irish are not real demonstrative emotionally. My father, uber Catholic, intensely serious Catholic, but hated people that wore religion on their sleeve. He would use that phrase.
Yeah.
And didn't like that at all. So that's what I mean, is they weren't emotionally demonstrative about it, but they were intensely grounded in their Catholicism.
Yeah. Just the opposite of Southern Pentecostals, I suppose.
I wouldn't dare.
Yeah. You become conscious that the Catholic faith has a profound rational and intellectual dimension about the age of 14. right?
Yeah.
When you're introduced to the two Toms.
That's right. So when I was a freshman at Fenwick High School, which is a Dominican high school outside Chicago, still going strong, but I'm a 14-year-old, you know, Catholic kid going to Mass on the weekend, but not particularly enamored of things religious.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a baseball player when
sure.
I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one fine day when a young Dominican friar laid out for us, I think it was the argument for motion, or one of the classic Thomistic arguments for God. And as I've told that story many times, but I think for every other kid in the class, it was just another day. But for whatever reason, I see it now as an actual grace, it was like a bell going off for me.
Wow.
It was like a light
yeah.
being turned on to realize that religious belief is something substantive and intellectually defensible. I wouldn't have used that language at the time when I was 14,
but that's
what was striking me, I think, because I came of age, as I say in the book, at the high point of banners and balloons Catholicism. So I'm the first generation that followed the council. So we were taking in a lot of the immediate post-conciliar confusion.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And there was certainly a dialing down of the intellectual dimension of the faith. And there's a million reasons for that, and we could discuss it. But the fact was, a young Catholic kid at that time didn't think, oh, yeah, religion, that's something really intellectually rich.
Right.
And I was given like this one little taste of that tradition, and it was off to the races for me. It was the opening of a door. And I've never gone back out that door. You know, I mean, I went in that door at 14, and I'm still in the room that was opened up by that door.
Yeah, there's a sense of mission and call in that, in recalling that moment.
I look back at it now.
Yeah.
Absolutely, it was God reaching out to me at
yep.
that point, and
yep.
that's how God kicked open the door for me.
Yeah.
Then you mentioned, you're right, the two Toms. The other Thomas was Thomas Merton.
This one I love, because your brother throws Seven Story yeah. Mountain at you, and he says, look at this. This is from a Trappist monk.
Yeah.
And you say,
right.
What the heck do I want?
I said,
anything from a Buddhist.
Was by some Buddhist. And, of course, full of irony, given Merton's later interest in
that's
Buddhism.
True.
You know, but
right.
At that time, I'm 15. I'm 16. I was working at the bookstores. I must have been 16. And then literally, yeah, it was he threw the book, and it landed on my lap. And I brought that book home. I could still see it in my mind's eye with the cover ripped off, paperback. But I read it, you know, you're 16, and so you're kind of at this romantic stage of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a book about someone falling in love with God
yeah.
in this intensely romantic way. But mind you, too, very interesting, because a key moment in that book is when Merton describes the moment he discovered, the same thing I discovered, when he takes Etienne Gilson's book off the shelf
yes.
at Scribner's bookstore
right.
and discovers the Thomistic metaphysical tradition.
Yeah.
And that was the way the door was kicked open for him.
That's right.
So I'm reading this book about this guy falling in love with God, and that happened to me too when I discovered Aquinas. And so I think what happened was Merton began to fill in some of the emotional and experiential side. Where Aquinas was, oh, yeah, this is intellectually respectable. This is a substantive point of view. And then Merton filled in a lot of the
yeah.
rest of the picture. You know, so those two Thomases were decisive for me.
Beautiful. You were born a year before Kennedy was elected Catholic president. I think the year after, John the 23rd became Pope, just before the Second mm-hmm. Vatican Council. And so
yeah.
you grew up in that period of time, which, at least in America, represents the peak of American Catholic self-confidence,
yeah.
but also
yeah.
the confusion that follows
yeah.
after the council. How did yeah. you experience that post-conciliar debate, confusion, whatever was going on? How did
yeah,
it hit you?
Actually, the way you put it there is really good, because I was born, I was a little tiny kid, right at the turning moment.
Yep.
Because you know, you think of, as you suggest, the church prior to the council in our country, you've got, you know, Merton, and you've got Dorothy Day, and in the English-speaking world, you have Graham Greene and Evelyn Waugh and
right.
Fulton Sheen, and you have this great revival of Catholic literary achievement, philosophical achievement, all of that. And Vatican II, in many ways, representing a culmination of a lot of this great intellectual efforts from the Ronners and DeLubachs and Guardinis and Ratzingers and Wojtyłas, et cetera.
Yeah.
So all of that's going on. But then and I inherited, as I said, the immediate aftermath of the council, where an awful lot of that was bracketed or it fell through.
Yeah.
And what we got was this, what I'm calling banners and balloons. We got a very intellectually superficial, experiential Catholicism. I would say, for me as a little kid, if you asked me about spirituality, I would have said something about social justice, probably.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
what we took in, and again, there's nothing in the world wrong with it, but what we took in, especially at that time, think late 60s, early 70s, the civil rights movement, you know, and concern for the poor, et cetera, that's the preoccupation of the church.
Yeah.
I probably would have said, oh, yeah, that's what spirituality means. It means being committed to social justice, you know?
Yeah.
But the tradition of prayer, of liturgy, of intellectuality, of philosophy, of cultural engagement, none of that, in my experience, came through.
Yeah.
And then through the weird grace of God, it's like this little ray of light came through, which was Thomas Aquinas for me.
Yeah.
And what did I know? I was 14. I didn't know, oh, this is some pre-conciliar or this is a conservative. I wouldn't have known any of that
right,
at the time.
Right.
I did. I would go innocently to a priest, like when I was 16, 17, and I would talk about Thomas Aquinas, and they look at me like, where did you come from?
That was all
kind of passé. That was out. We're into the new way of doing it. But I didn't know any better. It was just what was given to me.
Right. Well, one thing I've always loved about your presentation is that you transcend this conservative versus liberal dichotomy, this kind of political thing. And when were you aware that you were doing that? That you were post-liberal, you weren't anti-liberal.
Right. Yeah, I suppose in an explicitly intellectual way, not till I started reading the post-liberals and the post-moderns when I was probably teaching at the seminary. But I can tell you this with absolute confidence, that I didn't enter into my work as a writer and a speaker with that in mind.
Yeah.
I really didn't. I thought, I got to find, what's the middle ground,
right.
or the path beyond the two. I really didn't. I just thought, I want to talk about what I find most compelling about Catholicism. And I think what happened was liberals and conservatives who had been fighting for decades about sex and authority, which is the two major preoccupations, I would say, they said, oh, yeah, that is great about the cross or about the resurrection or about God or about the Trinity or about redemption or about the church. Yeah. And both sides would say, yeah, I think that's good and interesting. I think that's what happened. It was not so much that I had thought it through this way.
Right.
I want to show you what I find compelling about the Catholic tradition, and both sides found that appealing.
Could say amen to it, yeah. Yeah. Bishop Robert Barron, my guest, To Light a Fire on the Earth, Proclaiming the Gospel in a Secular Age. We've been taking a look a little bit about his own formation and upbringing. We're also going to get on to some of the content.
High school juniors and seniors, college seniors and graduates, you're invited to the Ave Fall Fest, Thursday, November 16th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at Domino's Farms in Ann Arbor. Learn about the incredible Ave Maria University Michigan scholarship of $28,000 over 4 years and the generous Ave Maria School of Law Michigan Toledo full tuition scholarship. Meet admissions counselors and enjoy dinner and giveaways all for free with registration at AveMariaFoundation.org.
How to be safe online is one of the timely topic workshops at this year's Walk in New Directions Conference, sponsored by the Catholic Youth Organization, better known as CYO. This one-day gathering of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders will be held on November 4th at Sacred Heart Parish in Dearborn. Each year, young people from all over the area come together for workshops, service projects, and mass. Registration is now open. Please go to @CYO Detroit on Facebook and choose events. That's @CYO Detroit on Facebook.
Looking for affordable Catholic health care? Look no further. CMF Curo is the only Catholic health ministry which provides an established health care program, spiritual growth opportunities within Catholic community, and unique wellness programs and health tools. Plus, it is half the cost of many insurances. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com or visit cmfcuro.com. CMF Curo. It's my Catholic healthcare.
The Catholic Church stands on the shoulders of giants who shared the truth. Now it's our turn. Join Branches Catholic Ministries on November 18th for Regenerated 2017 at the Scotiabank Convention Center in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Speakers will address the most important question of our time. What is truth? Where do we find it? For the first time, Regenerated Youth will be hosted alongside the Adult Conference. Get tickets now at branchesoftheword.org.
First Presbyterian Church in Ann Arbor presents Requiem by John Rutter. Choirs and chamber orchestra share the ageless Latin text interspersed with biblical text in English. On Sunday, November 5th at 3 p.m. at the church at 1432 Washtenaw Avenue in Ann Arbor. There's no admission charge. For more information, visit firstpresbyterian.org or call 734-662-4466.
Affirm Films and Sony Pictures Animation present The Star, the fully animated story of the first Christmas, told through a whole new set of eyes. Bo the donkey and his stable of animal friends follow the star to become some unlikely heroes.
That light, that's the star.
This is where it's been leading me.
What's his name?
His name is Jesus.
The Star, in theaters November 17th. More information is available at thestarmovie.com.
At their September 2011 meeting, the Ladies of Heart to Heart Catholic Women's Apostolate hosted Father Ben Lutke talking about forgiveness.
No one can heal that wound but you. And so we have to recognize that it is our obligation to forgive so that we can heal that wound. During the Mass, I said that we can forgive over and over and over until the wound is healed. Well, that's exactly what we have to do, especially when we're disappointed in someone.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. On his annual visit to Heart to Heart, Father Ben Lutke taught about our obligation to forgive so that we are able to receive the Lord's healing, and how the sacrament of confession plays a key role in that healing process. Listen to Putting On the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. My guest is Bishop Robert Barron, taking a look at this outstanding book that he has just published along with John Allen, To Light a Fire on the Earth, Proclaiming the Gospel in a Secular Age. You are frequently compared to Archbishop Fulton Sheen, because of your prominence within the Catholic world, and because people are proud of the work that you've done, you can take your stand in modern culture and speak the faith clearly, winsomely. And Sheen made Catholics proud in the 1950s with his presentation. You're living in two very different worlds with two very different audiences. So when people compare you to Sheen, what do you think?
Oh, well, you know, my first reaction has always been, you know, dumb in on some dignos. I mean, he's a hero of mine. In our Word on Fire office, now in Santa Barbara, when it was in Chicago, we had a big photograph of Sheen. I've admired him immensely, you know, and it's that combination of deep considered intellectualism,
mm-hmm,
and a profound knowledge of the culture. And yeah, he brought those two things together in the 50s and 40s. That's what I've tried to do my own way, you know.
Right.
So that's where I find him an extraordinary inspiration. You know, as a rhetorician, I mean, he was so finely trained in the style of the time, which, as I say in the book, wouldn't work today. You know, Sheen probably strikes us today as a little bit theatrical.
Right.
You know? But that was the rhetorical style of the time, and he was trained in it. And people clearly at the time weren't put off by it. They thought that was...
It took the 1960s to do that. Yeah.
And think of, you know, even the difference in styles of acting. Look at movies pre-1965 and post.
Yep.
Is it kind of a naturalism, you might say? Now, for better or for worse, we can debate that, but Sheen had that theatrical style. You know, the use of humor, his knowledge of the culture, the ease of communication, the deep intellectualism. I mean, all of that I've long admired in Fulton Sheen. So, you know, I mean, it's also, in a way, pointing a target on your back when someone says, oh, you're the
yeah, new Fulton exactly.
Sheen. Oh, yeah. He is not Fulton Sheen. He's no Fulton Sheen, that guy. So, you know, I realize that, too. But I'm flattered, and I certainly feel unworthy of that comparison.
One of the groundbreaking points in apologetics that you're identified with is beauty. We all know apologetics. Well, first of all, what happened to apologetics after the council?
It's a good question, and I think I addressed it in the book a bit. When I was coming of age, I can tell you, what we call classical apologetics was frowned upon. It was seen as defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So the church is not there to defend. It's there to, you know, propose.
Right.
It was seen as anti-Protestant. I mean, so why are we stirring up all these disagreements? Why don't we show, you know, what we have in common?
Mm-hmm.
It was seen as rationalistic. So, oh, who needs all these arguments? They don't care about arguments. They want to see, you know, the living witness. If any of that sounds familiar, that was all the way I was trained.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Apologetics fell on the bad side of all those equations, you know. Now, as you're correctly suggesting, what happened was when the culture, we were reaching out to it and we're friendly to it and, oh, come on in and read the signs of the times. But trust me, you know this too, the culture didn't just come running into our arms. The culture, in fact, and I'll go up to the post 9/11 period. Mm-hmm. The culture turned radically against us.
Right.
Read The New Atheist.
Yep.
Read Sam Harris. Well, you go out to meet Sam Harris with flowers and open arms, you're going to get run over.
Right.
And that's what happened. Watch some of the first Catholic attempts to deal with The New Atheist. They were pathetic.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have the apologetic tools
right.
to do it. You know, I'm all in favor of reaching out to the culture, but I also know the culture can turn demonic pretty quickly. And so you got to be able to defend against the dark side of the culture. I'm very open to intellectual ways of doing the thing. But when intellectual arguments are coming after us, yeah. we got to be able to meet them on their own terms.
Absolutely.
I'm all in favor of ecumenism. I've been involved in ecumenical conversations for years. But at the same time, I realize there are significant differences that obtain among the different Christian denominations.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're all just saying the same thing deep down.
Right.
So we need a new apologetic. Here I'll quote my hero, Francis George. Not just the old, but we need a new version of apologetics. And I'm happy to be associated with that movement.
As I started off saying, before I brought in this question about what happened to apologetics, I brought up the question of beauty. And beauty is disarming. So mm-hmm. if you go up to somebody and say, hey, let me tell you the truth, I've got the truth on this, people are going to get immediately defensive, especially in this day and age, where they always suspect that if you claim to have the truth, what you're secretly doing is figuring out a way to get power over them.
That's right.
So, and yet truth, we believe that there is truth, there is objective truth, mm-hmm. just as there's objective morality. Beauty, though, disarms people. Creates a certain innocence, I think, in us, which allows us to hear voices that we may have shielded ourselves from. I was thinking of people I know. You and I have talked about the art historian Kenneth Clark before.
Yeah.
I think
of
a friend of mine, Tom Howard. I think of another friend, Rod Dreher.
Yeah.
Who's Clark? I'm not sure what his final outcome was, but the other two.
Catholic. I think he became a Roman Catholic.
Oh, good.
Deathbed, practically, yeah.
Beautiful. Well, these other two friends of mine. It was walking into a cathedral with Rod. It was Shark, and I can't remember where Tom went in, but that opened doors to them that had previously been closed. What is that? How does that work?
I totally get it. Well, it's the three transcendentals, right? The good, the true, and the beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're transcendentals because they're associated with the very idea of being. So wherever you find existence, you're going to find truth, goodness, and beauty. Now, it also shows why they're interrelated. One always leads to the other because mm-hmm. they're reducible to the same thing. Now, what's helpful there is the beautiful, which is more winsome. It's not going to raise the hackle so immediately.
Right.
It'll draw you in. but it'll also lead you to the good and to the true, ineluctably, if you let it. If you follow it far enough, it'll lead you to the other two transcendentals. So that's why I've tried to use it today, because mm-hmm. the first two will excite a lot of immediate opposition. The third, not as much. I totally get the walk into Shard and the door gets kicked open.
Yeah.
What happened to me in that classroom at Fenwick High School, for whatever reason, in God's providence, can happen to someone else when they confront something that's truly beautiful. It can kick open a door. And I've traced that tradition, go all the way back to Plato's Symposium, you find it. Come up through Dante, come all the way up to James Joyce. The same thing is repeated, that the confrontation with the beautiful place or person or event kicks open the door that leads you eventually to the source of all beauty. And so I've said, I told John Allen this over and over again, part of our genius as Catholics is we never threw anything away.
Yeah, right.
In the course of 2,000 years, there have been certainly these challenges at all three of those levels. But at its best, the Catholic Church didn't jettison any of it. So if you want intellectualism, man, I'll give you Thomas Aquinas. You want the good, I'll give you Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. You want the beautiful, I got Dante, I got Chartres, I got the Sistine Chapel, you know?
Right.
So I use that image, I think in the book I throw it in there, about the grandma's attic quality. You know, when you're a kid, you go up to the attic in your grandma's house, and it's filled with all this stuff, and what is that, and where did that come from?
Right.
Look at that old thing. But grandma, thank God, didn't throw it away. It's still up in the attic. See, that's what happened to me when I was 14, is I got drawn up into this grandma's attic of Catholicism and found, oh, wow, look at these arguments from time. That's really fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, even though at that time, they were not on display in the house. They were up in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
But through
mm-hmm.
God's grace, I got up into the attic. So I tried to use that. Draw people in with the beautiful, and it'll lead them to the good and the true.
Now, you recall, this gets a little technical, but I want to mention it because it's of great interest to me, and I think maybe for others who have thought about this. You refer to John Henry Newman and what he's called the illative sense, which is a technical word, but what does he mean by that?
Yeah, it's just from the Latin word to carry, right? Like to translate something,
mm-hmm.
to carry it across. So the illative sense, he made up that word, is the sense in us that carries us from a variety of arguments, intuitions, experiences, hunches, to a sense. So Newman's point, which I think is really important and very interesting,
mm-hmm.
we are rarely brought to a sense, he thinks, through a formal syllogism, you know, a formal argument. Sometimes that works in certain cases, like, okay, this is true, that's true, therefore this third thing is true. Yeah, sometimes. But typically, Newman says, it's by a process of informal inference that we come to assent. Meaning, okay, I got that argument, I got this argument, I got this experience, I got this witness, I got this hunch, and by the illative sense, all these converge to the point where I say, yes, that's true. Now, the reason I like that, I mean, I like so much in Newman, but I think it's a great thing for an apologist or an evangelist to know. So it's rare when you're dealing with somebody that, okay, you got this problem. All right, here's the argument. Got it? All right, let's move on.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
No, maybe you'd share an argument and someone goes, uh-huh, yeah, okay, all right. But then let me tell you about this and let me tell you about that and then there's this. And why don't you go and watch what this person's doing? And, oh, do you know the story of St. Francis? And it's by this process, governed by the illative sense, that people tend to come to the point where they say, okay,
yeah,
I agree, I accept.
There's a sense of ownership at that point. I mean, a sense of personal acquaintance with the ideas.
Yeah.
And there's something, some sort of personal grasping of what happened. It becomes part of you for some reason at that point.
Yes, that's a good way to put it, because if I give you an argument, and man, it's a knockdown argument, and you might feel like, well, yeah, but I don't want to just cave into that argument. I don't want to just have that thing imposed on me. I want to come by my own lights to this intuition.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, the illative sense is more patient, and it allows the person to assess these in themselves, perhaps, not fully convincing arguments.
Yeah.
But when they come together to the same point, they have a convincing power.
Yes, yes. My guest, Bishop Robert Barron, looking at his most recent contribution, To Light a Fire on the Earth, Proclaiming the Gospel in a Secular Age. We'll come back with conversation about the new evangelization and exactly what that is and how goes the fight. I'm Al Cresta.
In 1916, Auto Owners Insurance teamed up with local independent agents so customers could get fast, friendly, local service. It worked so well, we decided to keep it that way. And 100 years later, we still do things the same way, by teaming up with local independent agents who deliver quality, personal service.
Thank you.
Some might call that old school. Then again, maybe everything old is new again. Kind of refreshing, isn't it?
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
I'd like to recommend my dentist, Dr. Matty, and his practice, Advanced Dentistry. When I needed a new dentist, I remembered I'd been hearing about him for years on Ave Maria Radio. I had recommendations from friends, but decided if Dr. Matty supports Catholic Radio, he must share my Catholic values, and I wanted to support him. Dr. Matty's degree is from Tufts University. Dr. Matty really has a state-of-the-art, full-service dental practice, and I know he specializes in dental implants. I'm very happy with his caring, patient, professional service, and also the results of my Invisalign braces, which he provided. Dr. Matty works with me to keep my costs low rather than have to carry dental insurance. Try Advanced Dentistry. I know you'll like Dr. Matty very much. That's why I offered this, my personal testimony.
Conveniently located at 13 Mile and Telegraph. Call 248-594-9592 or click AdvancedDentistryCenter.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds, investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria Mutual Funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives, smart investing, and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Affirm Films and Sony Pictures Animation present The Star, the fully animated story of the first Christmas told through a whole new set of eyes. Bo the donkey and his stable of animal friends follow the star to become some unlikely heroes.
That light, that's the star.
This is where it's been leading me.
What's his name?
His name is Jesus.
The Star, in theaters November 17th. More information is available at thestarmovie.com.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
How far away is your mouth from your child's ears when you speak? It's called nagging from a distance. Simple formula. The degree of effectiveness, E, is equal to R, the number of repetitions, minus D, the distance. To put it another way, farther away you are from little Butkus when you tell little Butkus what you would like, the less likely you will be heard. Oh, not because he doesn't hear you. He hears you quite well. And if you think he doesn't, try this little test. Stand about 3 miles away and go, Butkus, I'm going to give you $10 a week allowance, and I'm going to make your sister do all of your chores. All right! You get a megaphone from 2 feet away and go, Butkus, please hang your coat up. What? Simple rule of discipline. Make your requests close and once. We'll get to the once part in future commentaries, but for right now, the closer you are, more specifically, the closer your mouth is to your child's ears when you make your request, the more likely you will be heeded. Now, this will mean you might have to walk a little more, but you'll talk a lot less. I'm Dr. Ray.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta with Bishop Robert Barron. His most recent contribution, again, with John Allen, To Light a Fire on the Earth, Proclaiming the Gospel in a Secular Age. Before we move away from beauty, Bishop, I want to talk about its relationship to goodness, because a number of people have made the argument, and you've made it as well, that beauty and goodness actually do come together when we look at the lives of the saints, and that there's something truly beautiful about authentic goodness. Can you elaborate a bit?
Yeah, sure. And that's true. See, the beautiful, Aquinas says, appears when you have integritas, consonantia, and claritas coming together. Integritas, wholeness, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Consonantia, harmony. Claritas is radiance, right? When those three things come together, Aquinas said, you have the beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, hey, it's a beautiful day, or what a beautiful catch that was in the end zone, or what a beautiful face. What you're noticing are these three things coming together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, look at a saint's life. Integritas, you know, wholeness. Mm-hmm. Kierkegaard said a saint is someone whose life is about one thing. That's what he's noticing, is everything in the saint's life coheres around one central point. Now, look at consonantia, that everything hangs together harmoniously. Your public life, your private life, cohere and reflect each other. Your minds and your emotions and your passions and your body cohere and they reflect each other. Your friendships are gathered around one great point. Everything in your life is harmonious. That's true of a saint, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And then claritas, I find really interesting because radiance, you might say,
mm-hmm.
light. But what's the symbol we typically use for holiness? But light,
yeah,
right? The halo,
absolutely.
Light coming from, because it's the luminosity that comes from a compelling light.
Yeah.
So a saint, like Mother Teresa, is a good example. People saw integritas, they saw consonantia, they saw claritas. They saw the beautiful. But see, maybe what they saw first was the beauty. Like, but look at that, what a beautiful life.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
upon deeper reflection, they saw, oh, it's a beautiful life because it's a good life.
Yes.
Or do it the other way if you want. It's a good life because it's a beautiful life. So that's how the two of them fit together, I think.
Mm-hmm. Let me pivot from that then to evangelization by means of the martyrs here. You wrote, if I remember correctly, that it will take martyrs to re-evangelize Europe.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about the life of the martyr that forces people to reconsider the truth of what they're saying?
Yeah, and I know that it's kind of a dire thing to say, and I remember saying that to John not long after I got back from World Youth Day. World Youth Day was late summer 2016, and I would have been talking to John like late summer 20. No, I would have been talking to John a few weeks later. And I spoke at World Youth Day in Krakow the day after the French priest, remember, Father Ahmed, was his name, was murdered.
There
was this enormous interest and reaction, you know, and I think that was very much on my mind, that here in the heart of very secular Europe, there's a Catholic priest who was murdered for his faith.
Yeah.
And I know it's dire to say, but it's been true across the centuries. It's that kind of witness that speaks most powerfully of the cross and therefore has the most powerful evangelical influence.
Mm-hmm.
Arguments, to be sure, witness of holy lives, to be sure, all these great things. But ultimately, it's the martyrs that speak of Christ most profoundly. And I don't want to overstate things, but the situation is so dire in Europe that it struck me that that's probably what we need.
Yeah.
Are people willing to give their lives for the faith, to reawaken it in Europe?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it makes some sense to me because, of course, what happened in Europe throughout the 20th century, the shedding of blood, and the Christian faith has often been blamed for that. You had this Christian continent, and they were unable to stem the flow of bloodshed from the First World War, Second World War, you know.
Yep.
And you might, in some way, it may take the shedding of blood to redeem that situation.
I've always felt that. What you just said, I think, is right.
Yeah.
Why is Europe now a very secularist kind of wasteland ideologically? I do think the two great wars and the genocide of the last century have a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as people pointed out, French Christians killing German Christians, killing Italian Christians, Canadian Christians, killing at large the American Christians. So you look at that, these two orgies of violence among Christians, and then And then this terrible Holocaust of Jews and many others in the heart of Christian countries. And something broke. Something broke in the spirit of Europe. And you can see it all over the place. They haven't begun to recover from that spiritually.
Right.
And, yeah, it'll take very heroic missionaries and evangelists to turn that around.
Let's talk about what's called the new evangelization. And what's new? What's new about the new evangelization?
Yeah, it's new. John Paul, I like to go back to his famous speech. I think it was 1992. He said, it's new in ardor, new in method, and new in expression. So it's evangelization is evangelization, meaning declaring the lordship of Jesus, the good news, the euangelion, that Jesus is risen from the dead and therefore is Lord. That's what evangelization is. So we need a new evangelization because of the rise of secularism in the West, because a lot of classically Christian nations have now fallen back into a secularism. So we need an evangelization like the one that Paul engaged in and everybody else, but new in method, new in expression, and new in ardor. And that ardor thing, that's, I think, the inheritance of the banners and balloons, Catholicism. It's a church that lost its ardor.
Yeah.
It lost its,
yeah,
its passion, its fire. If we're always reaching out to the culture and we're like you in so many ways and we're like the other religions and Jesus is a very intriguing figure, but so is Buddha.
Yeah. Why don't you join us? We're nice people.
Yeah, but there's no ardor. There's no passion to share Jesus Christ. And then, see, new in expression, I think that's what will beguile people at this time. So what we were just talking about, beauty, I think is an example of, it's a new approach to evangelization that might start with the beautiful rather than with, argumentation.
Right.
And then, new in method, we can go on and on, but that's, I think, all the new media.
Mm-hmm.
So my own work, Word on Fire, what did I know about the new media? I'm this guy trained in books and ideas and all that, but I kind of intuited and then happily got all these young kids to join the movement who understand it. That this is a great way to communicate. These are new methods available to us. And they have been, you know that well. Of course, you've been doing it for a long time. But these are extraordinarily powerful tools.
Yeah.
So new in ardor, new in method, new in expression. And that's what makes it a new evangelization.
Is it also new in intended audience, given that so many Catholics, so many of the baptized, seem to not be aware of what's at stake in Jesus' call to be a disciple?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's, you're aware of this army now of people who are alienated from Christianity.
Yeah.
And not necessarily aggressively, like, oh, boy, they've run away. But
right,
they just don't know it. They
right,
just don't
right,
know the biblical story. You know, go up to probably the middle of the last century, almost everybody in our country would have known the great biblical story. If you made references even to people like, Nehemiah or Zechariah, people would know what you were talking about.
Yep.
I mean, now, make reference to the most prominent players, people won't know. I'm always haunted by this story because it could happen here. Maybe it is. Cardinal George told the story many years ago. He's head of the OMI, his order, and he was traveling through East Germany, so a country that had been now completely under an atheist regime, And a group of high school kids were touring a Catholic church, or maybe it was the remnants of it. I forget, but he was in there. And the kids came in, and there was a depiction of the crucified Jesus, right, hanging in the church. One of the kids, Cardinal George, said he heard this from his own ears, said to his teacher, why would they have a statue of Spartacus in here? And so here's Germany. I mean, you're the heart of Christian Europe. But all you need is one generation that doesn't learn the faith, and they don't know the faith.
Wow.
Why is Spartacus in this? Why are they showing Spartacus? So that can happen. And I do tremble a bit when I realize, sure, that can happen here.
Yeah.
So, yes, we got to be aware of that new audience.
You said something earlier, which I picked up in the book, too, and that is this idea of movement. Word on Fire is clearly a ministry, but your approach has an appeal which extends beyond just your particular productions. You've come to represent a way of presenting the faith. Talk to me about the possibility of Word on Fire and yourself creating a self-conscious movement.
Yeah. This came many years ago now. but from some of the young people at Word on Fire. So this is before I was bishop. I was still in Chicago. Before I was rector even at the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at Word on Fire, and a couple of the young people, our employees, came. And they said, you know, we're interested in more than just working for this ministry. We're interested in being part of, and I don't know if they use the word order or society. I don't know what word they use, but I knew what they meant. I said, okay, well, why don't we, let's sit down and talk about it. So we did. And then I said, okay, can you find other people in our group or maybe even friends of yours who would have a similar sense?
Yeah.
I said, yeah. And I said, well, why don't we then have a little, like, a day of reflection around it?
Mm-hmm.
So we did. We went out to Mundelein Seminary, where I was living at the time. And we did. We had a day of prayer. So this has gone back a while. Then we got Cardinal George involved. Because he was, I call him the grandfather of Word on Fire. If I'm the father, I'll leave the grandfather. And he began talking about how his community, the OMIs, were founded and were established. And then, just before he died, Cardinal George signed the statutes of the Word on Fire movement. It has 8 basic principles, a certain form and structure of life. The basic idea being we want to draw people into a lifestyle centered around evangelization.
Yes.
And
yes.
We want to provide specialized formation training, first online, because that's where our community exists. You know, we don't have them gathered in one building. They exist, as it were, online.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're going to be inviting people to enter into that world. And my hope would be, if I'm, you know, dreaming big about it, Word on Fire centers eventually in
nice.
Major cities. But to continue with this Internet outreach, we could take you all over the world.
Yeah.
So we're dreaming at this point. We're kind of praying, thinking, hoping. My conviction, Al, now is as I get, you know, to a certain age is, I don't want this just to be, oh, this ministry I had, then I fade away, and then it's all
right,
over.
Right.
You know, is I'd like to have some sense of this thing going on after I'm gone.
Well, I'll tell you, your approach to evangelization and apologetics, I think, is the most winsome that I've seen. I've had great success myself beginning to use this approach through the beautiful. And just thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay. God bless you.
We'll talk again.
Okay.
Bishop Robert Barron, to light a fire on the earth, proclaiming the gospel in a secular age. We will pursue this question of the possibility of a movement surrounding his work.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board certified dermatologists and fellowship trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
I met my husband in my first year of college. We both came from strong Catholic families and wanted lots of children. After 3 years of marriage and still not pregnant, we felt our dream of a big family slipping away. My sister encouraged us to visit our local Catholic store and get a novena to St. Gerard. When we arrived, we were unsure about our need, but the staff was kind and helpful. Wow, what an incredible Catholic store. They encouraged us to pray and trust in God's providence. One worker told us stories of other couples, just like us, who were desperate to start a family. 4 years and 2 children later, we have been back to that incredible Catholic store for baby, baptism, and toddler gifts. God bless the staff at that incredible Catholic store. An incredible Catholic store in your area can be found at incrediblecatholicstore.com. The incredible Catholic store, transforming the world one soul at a time.
All Souls Day, November 2nd, and Cemetery Sunday, November 5th, are days when the Church remembers those who have died. The Catholic Cemetery Conference invites you to make one of these days special by visiting the Catholic cemetery where your loved ones are buried. While there, offer a personal prayer at this sacred place, blessed and set aside as their final resting place. Your remembrance of them will bring you peace and comfort. For the location of your local Catholic cemetery, please go to cemeterysunday.org.
Once again, thank you for being with me. The new book by Bishop Barron is available, of course, at AveMariaRadio.net. In fact, I think today it's just been released publicly. It's been able to be reviewed over the last 2 weeks. But I think you can begin buying it today. Again, you want to make sure you get your hands on it. Just virtually anything that Bishop Barron does is certainly worth pursuing. He's developed a unique and identifiable voice and a style of communication that is worth giving your attention to. So that's, again, follow up on that. Don't forget that last hour, of course, with our discussion about the campus rape frenzy and the deconstruction of the administrative state, we also have plenty of materials available in follow-up to those conversations as well. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net. And let me tell you what's coming up on tomorrow's Crest in the Afternoon. We're going to be talking with Naomi Schaefer Riley on how Washington is failing Native Americans. And if you're like me, you probably haven't given a lot of thought to what's happened to the American Indian population here. But you're going to be shocked at how ineffective, how all of our spending has only made matters worse for Native Americans, especially those on reservations. We're all going to talk about the origins of the Koran with Dr. Gabriel Reynolds. We'll be joined by Dr. John Safranek on the myth of liberalism and why it is that modern societies focused on liberty can't seem to define it effectively. And we'll also take a look at a songwriter, Carl DiRico, who wrote the old Animals hit, "It's My Life and I'll Do What I Want." Well, Carl now is saying, "It's My Life and I'll Do What God Wants." All that's coming
Cresta
up tomorrow.
In the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Sometimes marriage is for better and sometimes it's for worse, but when do you know when it's time to seek professional help? Research shows that most couples struggle for 4 to 6 years before seeking counseling. That's too long. Imagine finding out you had cancer and then waiting 6 years to make your first treatment appointment. The good news is that even at such a late stage, trained marriage-friendly therapists report a success rate of over 90%. Not every problem requires counseling, but if criticism, defensiveness, open conflict, or sullen silences are defining your everyday interactions with your spouse, the best studies indicate those are the warning signs that it's absolutely time to call a trained, marriage-friendly therapist. If you're ready to get some new skills, ask your pastor for a local referral or contact the Pastoral Solutions Institute for other resources. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, during her appearances to the three children at Fatima, the Blessed Mother called the world to conversion to her Immaculate Heart. Is this a foreign concept in Eastern spirituality or a familiar one?
Saturday evenings at 8:30.